You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
Are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything was well for you today. Hope you're ready to live for the weekend, living for the weekend. That's right, it's Friday. And it's good to be here. So you are listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. If you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Look at the top of the page. You'll see podcasts. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and you'll see dates, programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, once again, this program, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. All times are going to give our Eastern times. 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Mondays, Acres of Diamonds, Public Affairs Programming with Brother Jihad Ahmed. Followed by, from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and her daughter, Nataki Kamban. That is followed by, from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers, from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, from 7 to 9, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwai Ayan. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it is Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. So check them out tonight at 8 p.m. Time for an Awakening. Saturdays from 4 to 6. On Saturdays from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. The Sankofa Elders Council from 7 to 9 on Saturday. And then on Sunday, once again at 7 p.m. on Sunday, it is Time for an Awakening. Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. And once you go on there, of course, the products are produced by us, but they're also seeking donations. They want to establish or build a American African supermarket here in the Atlanta area, which we do not have one. I know, it's ridiculous. Africa for the Africans. My good brother, Brother Bomani, My good brother, Bomani Tayemba, AfricanForTheAfricans.org. And he has a trip upcoming in April 2nd to the 12th, Senegal and Gambia. May 24th to June 5th, back to Ghana. Then November 18th through the 29th, Tanzania. Many people pronounce it Tanzania, but the brother said it's pronounced Tanzania by the brothers and sisters there. So to me, if that's how they pronounce it, that's what it is, Tanzania.
And then December 24th to January 5th, Ghana. You can bring in the new year and the holidays in Ghana. Go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org or give Brother Bomani a call at 404-931-9429. That's 404-931-9429. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. And, of course, he updates the pictures that he has on the website, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Some outstanding pictures, believe me. Baba Rinoco, he has a program coming up. Baba Rinoco's program is today and tomorrow. If you go to Rinoco.com/lectures, put in February-26-27. I'm quite sure it'll come up by that time. And then once you're on there, click on the flyer. Click on a flyer. Put the information into the Eventbrite. Today, it is at Friday the 26th, 8 p.m. to 9:30 this evening, Eastern time, the time I'm going to give you Eastern. And then tomorrow, February 27th, 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. The cost is $25 for both sessions. Okay? What you will learn is part two of the Return to the Nile Valley webinar with Dr. Rinoco, the invasion and expulsion of the Hyksos, Africa's first national liberation struggle. You must check that out, the Hyksos, because prior to the Hyksos, we had thousands of years of uninterrupted civilization. Then the Hyksos came in, we expelled them within a few hundred years and jumped right back on the case. The 18th dynasty is proof of that. One of the most glorious dynasties in the history of ancient Kemet, imperial dynasty, with Thutmose and Queen Nefertari, Queen Hatshepsut, Amenhotep III and Queen Ty, Akhenaten and Nefertiti, Tutankhamun, ancient Africa's greatest historical period. And then the glorious Ramesses period, dominated by Ramesses the Great, Ramesses the Second. So all this information, and you know Baba Rinoco is going to have some great photos. So go to drrinoco.com/lectures, February 26, 27. I'm quite sure that'll come up. And when you get there, click on the flyer and then follow the Eventbrite information. Habasha. Habesha Incorporated, Habesha, stands for helping Africans by establishing schools at home and abroad, and the beautiful work they're doing at home, the Habesha Works program, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, and the Urban Green Jobs and Golden Growers. They do an outstanding job, and of course here in the Atlanta area. But their project in Ghana, the Kashi project in Ghana, is moving forward very nicely. Habesha. Incorporated.org. The LEDGE program, LEDGE stands for Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. The LEDGE program, they're doing outstanding work, and of course, in the areas of the of human development that are necessary, food, water, clothing, and shelter. They have 12 projects going on in six countries, and over 170 people involved, employed, and over 260 members. Check out the LEDGE Group, theledgegroup.com, and become a member. I mentioned before, and I'll mention again, there is land that they have a deal with the Tanzanian government in Tanzania. There's going to be land there that you can take advantage of. You can take advantage of that land. Go to the LEDGE Group, become a member. Become a member, and you can get land for $250 an acre. You can put $1,000 down and get 4 acres of land. And man, and I've seen some pictures of Tanzania. Darus Islam, the capital. Islam. Man, having little problems today. Happens that way sometimes. All right. Wadada's Healthy Marketing Juice Bar located in the West End here in Atlanta. I'm Ralph David Abernathy, across the street from Soul Veg, down the street from the Shrine of Black Madonna. Of course, the Shrine of Black Madonna is open on Fridays and Saturdays from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m., the Shrine. And also, the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, Mama Nia. She has opened up her new location in the mall right in the main thoroughfare. And give Mama Nia a call at 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The other bookstore we promote is the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. My good brother, Kazimde Ajamu. They have a coffee bar there serving delicious Cameroon boyo and others and assortments of teas and sandwiches and desserts and whatever. So check them out. The number to call is 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. The Shrine of the Black Madonna, as well as the Black Dot, they also have the NASGAS shoes, those red, black, and green shoes. I know you want some. I know you do, because I know I do. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. They have their Thursday night broadcast that went off last night on blogtalkradio.com. Go to blogtalkradio.com/ULU. They made a program, it's Dare to Win. That's every Thursday night from 9 p.m. to 10. From 9 p.m. to 10. And the number to call is 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Upcoming is the Us Lifting Us Conference. Hope to get either Brother Ankti or Brother Baba Akima to talk about the upcoming Us Lifting Us Conference. I know last year, We were about to open our conference is when everything shut down. People were here. Everything was set. And I said, no, can't do it. Everything is shut down. Yep. One year ago in March. But the conference is going to happen. I'll give you more details. I'll have people coming on and talk about it. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people. In the spirit of Ujamaa, cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Sun Goddess Sense, Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forge Park, Georgia. That's inside the International Discount Mall, booth number 225, booth number 225. And for more information, contact Sister Cheryl Shelley. I'm in set at 404-434-7963. Call Sister Shelley at 404-434-7963. That is Sun Goddess Sense. Sanjay-Haiti. My good sister is Sister Gabby. Sister Gabby sent me a bunch of pictures. I'm telling you, she lets you know where your money's going, your donations are going to a great cause, a worthy cause. To help our people in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. Because as you know, in those rural areas, there is no safety nest. So they may not be hardly getting anything. So it is just to help support them so they can do what they have to do. Sanjay, Sonjay-Haiti, AYITI.org. Sanjay-Haiti. Akabin Institute, Baba Baruti and Mama Ya have been doing an outstanding job of educating our young warriors. And so they need your support. So send your check or money order to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. But of course, you can use PayPal and Cash App. If you use Cash App, the dollar sign Ya, Y-A-A, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. And you can make a consistent monthly donation, whatever that amount is, everything is appreciated. All these things I announce here, believe me, the brothers and sisters whose businesses they are will truly appreciate whatever you can do to support what they do. You got that? Yeah, I know you do. What did I do here? I just did something to... Okay, got it back. There we go. Okay. The Yenye Say Sim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. February 25th. Sometimes one is tempted by discouragement, but the efficient, certain, and constant way to overcome these difficulties and discouragement is to actually go to the battlefront with the soldiers, with the people in arms. It is on the war front that we find the inexhaustible source of comfort and reason for struggle. There is the place where we must look for it. Ahmad Sékou Touré. In the early 1970s, the main ingredients lyrical reminded us that at one time or another, everybody plays the fool. We have all trusted unworthy individuals with our minds, emotions, and resources. This behavior is not foreign to the front line, for although we should be able to assume that everyone there knows what good character is, there is a range for within its personal expression. Nevertheless, hopefully most of us who have stood at the receiving end of deception have concluded that it is them, not us. The best response to those who have betrayed your trust is to continue doing the work as you were doing it before they did. Moving them out of your frontline circle, though, applying the time you would ordinarily waste on them to righteousness, productive work, is a correct response for warriors who have righteously studied and absorbed the ancient lessons. The wisdom of our ancestors on this matter is honest and healing. We will lessen the distractions trustless persons bring. We will lessen the distractions that trustless persons bring. Affirm, regardless of mental cycle residue, I gain motivation and healing from other honest frontline workers. Regardless of mental cycle residue, I gain motivation and healing from other frontline workers. February 26th. An authentic identity is an identity which contains values and habits to help you become successful and reproduce the best of your culture. An alien identity is one which has been... An alien identity is one which has been skillfully and carefully crafted and imposed upon you for the purpose of manipulation, exploitation, and suppression of your greatness. Dr. Chiki Akua, my good brother, my brother Chiki Akua. As a warrior, you must never forget that you have a direct responsibility to extend the honor and privilege of being a warrior to those choosing to follow in your footsteps through every thought, word, and deed. This must especially be remembered in this day and place of blatant personal contradictions and compromise. Above all, never violate your promise to those who give you the sight and the direction through which they thought, which they thought, said, and did. Never forget that those coming after you need you to be your warrior ancestors now more than ever. This being your charge, warrior, no matter the cost, be intrepid. Be consistent. Be diligent. Be resilient. Be loving. Be conscientious. Be uncompromising. Be careful. Be indefeatable. Be dependable. Be thorough. Be accountable. Be humble. Be non-contradictory. Be clear. Be honorable. Be visionary. All in all, be African. Affirm, nothing can stop nor will stop the violation of my power. No man, no nation, no contradictions, no history, no threat, no obstacles, nothing will ever deter me from liberating African people. I will always stand my African ground. Ashe. February 27th. Be careful how you touch her, for she'll awaken and sleep's the only freedom that she knows. New birth. Healers absorb the kinds of pain that easily tear others apart. Healers absorb the kinds of pain that easily tear others apart. They take it in without concern for the damage it may do to them because they know that eventually they will heal. They are altruistic, spiritual, and communal by nature. They know that there is no such thing as a healthy community if any individual within it is ill and or in pain. They help to release the anguish of a community at its roots. You can literally see this selfless absorption of others' hurt, anxiety, discomfort, frustration, fear, disease, and trauma through the magic of their caress and prayer. They touch, and through that touch and a warming insistence, they relieve us of the wave after wave of compacted, senseless agonies. They so easily take on its weight as we release that which ails us inside. They touch our mind, heart, and soul, opening up the pores and extracting the illness expelled, enveloping it and suffocating it with an altruistically sacrificed love. They are miracle workers whose calling is to return a healthy balance to our efforts to be African. Certainly, there is a cost to them. Healing other places a drain on their souls, on their physical, mental, and emotional and spiritual energies. No matter their level of commitment or engagement, healing others is always a massive spiritual sacrifice. And because of this, they must daily complete the personal rituals which keep them whole. For regardless of their power, they are still human. They cannot continue healing others without healing themselves. And because we need healing, we must protect them and provide them with whatever need to do this priceless work. Affirm, I ensure our healers healing peace. Affirm, I ensure our healers healing peace. The Inye Sesim of daily revolutionary thought. Waiting on my guest today, Brother Akil Parker. Yeah, we're going to talk today about the new movie, Coming to America 2. Get some thoughts about that, if you have any. Also, too, I want to say happy birthday to Brother Ralph. Brother Ralph, I know that you're listening. I appreciate you. I always give some love to Brother Ralph, because if it wasn't for Brother Ralph, I wouldn't be on this network. That's right. African Perspectives, we were on Blog Talk. And Brother Ralph contacted me. We talked. And I then talked to Brother Elliot and many other people who were with us at that time, moved from Blog Talk to Time for an Awakening Media. Dr. Rogers still doing his thing. In fact, I'm going to be talking with Us Lifting Us. Yeah, that's right. See if I can get Us Lifting Us to come back and be a part of what we do here. And that is, of course, raise the consciousness of our people, putting something on the minds of our people to help us, lead us in the right direction towards independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. Remember, our motto here on this program is Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. And boy, do we need it. Unify or die. Yep. My guest is with us, Brother Akil Parker. Brother Akil, how are you this day?
Peace, holds up. I'm doing good today.
Right on. Me too, my brother. I'm anxious to get off into this conversation about coming to America.
Yes, it's a timely conversation since Coming to America 2 is about to drop on Amazon, I think, March the 5th.
Right, so that's next week.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so I think, we need to, it boils down to being a media literacy conversation,
Yeah.
That I think we need to, be more aggressive with and have more conversations about media literacy. before we even start talking about it, I guess I want to put out like a disclaimer that, you know, the purpose of these conversations really should be about providing balance, you know, like balanced assessment, balanced analysis. Because a lot of times, like people like in our community and of our mindset and our worldview, when we end up being like, you know, the mainstream gives us something and, you know, people love it. And then we come along and we say something seen as perceived
right,
as negative
about it. Right.
you just want to pick my cornflakes.
Right.
Like, you hate me. You know, it's like, you always got something. It's always been Pan-African. It's always got something negative to say about something, right? You know? Yeah. Like, you know, don't let them in, man.
Right.
But no, really, it's really just about balance. And, you know, to be honest, I think it's, you know, as I was thinking about this a lot, and I actually was writing an article about Coming to America, just reflecting on it, just as a film and as a piece of propaganda. And just being honest, like, I mean, it's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
You know, it really is.
Yeah.
Well, it's hilarious. It's a hilarious movie. Coming to America Part 1, you know, and I think, but that's like, that's kind of like the danger in it, because I remember watching, you know, it was a lecture from the late Dr. Asa Hilliard, and he was giving a lecture sometime like right around the time that Monsters Ball came out, starring Halle Berry and Bob Thornton.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he said, which really crystallized things for me in terms of how media is, it's like, well, really, it's not about quote unquote hate or whatever, but it's really about, like, you know, the fact that she's such a great actress is why it becomes problematic. So it's like, the more talented a person is and the more, you know, popular or more effective that form of art is, the more it's able to get into our psyche and we like internalize it and accept it, you know, because she's such a great actress. So then those ideas that she puts out to our community that, you know, in terms of embracing the white savior ideal, Billy Bob Thornton has to save her, and, you know, and then she has to like go to him for support and protection and everything. Yeah. And then so good at that on screen.
Hey, after he was the one that pulled the lever to kill her husband, you know?
Exactly. That's a lot of symbolism.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of symbolism in that.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, in terms of like how we view these movies, we gotta get beyond, like, you know, all the fun and games. Because it's, you know, it's a lot of fun and games. But, you know, what is it that that Bible verse from Corinthians, you know, when I was a child, I spoke as a child, and, you know, I did childish things. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. So we have to, like, we have to get into like more of an adult, grown man, grown woman analysis of the type of media that we're and feeding ourselves in terms of our cultural diet. And, you know, balance is key. Balance is key because, like, I'm always promoting math, like all this math. I'm always promoting math. And when I teach students and I'm teaching, you know, adults, children, whoever, you know, how to solve equations. How do you solve an equation? You have to be balanced. If you subtract 3 on the left side of the equation, you have to also subtract 3 on the right side of the equation. Mm-hmm. You have to maintain balance. But what often happens is something is marketed to us and something is given to us, and we kind of just always want to stay on the positive side. We just want to say, oh, well, it's funny. This person's getting paid. You know, let them make their money. Don't say nothing negative. Don't say nothing that can be perceived as negative. You know, just let them get paid and let them get their money. But there are long-term consequences of doing that and not addressing these other aspects. Because what ends up happening is when that person is long gone and they've already made their money and they, you know, they're not around no more, there's still people that, you know, the reverberations of having not, you know, addressed some of the more negative aspects still affect us, you know. And like one of the things that, you know, I want to, you know, talk about today is, well, overall, the main thing I want to talk about today is like just the neocolonialism, you know, how much of a neocolonial project Coming to America really was, you know, back in 1988. In 1988, I was 8 years old. I didn't see the movie when it first came out. I saw it later, years later, when I was like an adult, or maybe a teenager, you know. But just a lot of things I just didn't notice. You know, and I really watched it again because I knew I was coming on the show for us to have this conversation. And I watched it again last week, and I was really sitting there like studying, you know, sitting there like analyzing and like really taking notes, you know. And as I was doing that, I was like, wow, like I never picked up on that.
When you get off into it and you think beyond what is being presented to you, you know, I know my children always said, Dad, you can't go. We can't go do a movie. You always want to be analytical, man. You just want the entertainment value of it. So, no, man, because there's messages, you know, both overt and subvert. You know, they're subliminally throwing stuff into you all the time. You know, the movie industry got busted back in the 50s using subliminal seduction. You know, you sitting up and you and your lady in the movie and in a twinkle of a fraction of a section, popcorn. You know, soda. Next thing you know, hey, baby, go out in the lobby and get me some juju beans and some, you know, and some popcorn, you know, because they understand, the Europeans understand how to manipulate the mind, you know, right. And present information in these movies help substantiate that, you know, because a lot of times our people believe what they see is just like historical movies, you know.
Right.
Many things we have to understand, just like in Judas and the Black Messiah, you know, there's parts of the movie where the movie itself or the directors or the producers use artistic licensing. That means that they can put into the movie something that is totally untrue, you know, as long as it doesn't break totally from the movie. And it's just a part of the movie. And many people watch it and believe that is true. That's what happened, you see. So... You know, that's the thing about, for us, particularly for us, because, you know, even the movies that we produce, you know, we need to look at them in a scrutinizing eye.
Yeah. And if you start, you know, we always got to, you know, in America, in a capitalist system, you always got to follow the money. So if you even start with, you know, because it's much deeper than Eddie Murphy. Because a lot of times we'll watch a movie and we say, oh, there's a black man. And, oh, Denzel's in it. So we kind of look at it as, oh, this is Denzel's movie. But we don't look at, like, the production studio, the distribution company. So I started looking at, like, okay, who was the studio? It was Paramount Pictures, right? So then we got to say, okay, well, that got me to thinking. So I started going down this rabbit hole. I'm like, okay, well, what other types of movies has Paramount produced? A couple, you know, come to mind, a couple that, you know, kind of put things in perspective. Now, I think I might have seen, this is before my time, but I might have seen the movie Mandingo. Mandingo came out in 1975.
Right.
Well, there's that. There's the toy. The toy came out in 82. I remember I watched the toy, and I was watching the toy, and I'm like, yo, Richard Pryor is a personal slave for this little white boy.
Yeah. Yep.
He's his personal slave. You know what I mean? So I'm like, okay, so there's that. And then, of course, you got Gone with the Wind. Paramount produced Gone with the Wind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at the top of the list, way back in 1915, and, you know, Woodrow Wilson, that's why we know Woodrow Wilson was not a friend of the black man.
Right.
He allowed D.W. Griffith to come to the White House and premiere Birth of a Nation.
Yeah.
Birth of a Nation was produced by Paramount Pictures.
And Woodrow Wilson said, this is history written in lightning, you know? Right. And he was promoting that as the truth, as history. You know,
and again, in terms of comparative analysis, so, you know, okay, you know, Donald Trump is no longer the president of the United States, but in a lot of the conversations we have about him being the worst president ever, a lot of people don't even know about the previous president.
Oh, right.
Anyway, so it's a faulty. It's not really an analysis anyway. It's like a knee jerk emotional response to just things that are, you know, put in the media. Not to say that he's a friend of the black man. He was a friend of the black man neither. I don't think he was, but. You know, without having, you know, without, a lot of people don't even know, okay, like, Woodrow Wilson had, you know, a Klansman, you know, in the White House premiering his movie. Like, like, you know, like, just blatant. Like, you know what I mean? But, so this is, you know, this is like the foundation. It's like, okay, who's producing this? And then when we look at it through a critical lens, we really start to think, like, wow, like, you know, okay, it's cool. Like, you know, we want to see ourselves on TV. We want to see ourselves in movies. But this is really about the white imagination and the European imagination, you know, because Zamunda, like actually the article that I'm working on, I entitled it, Zamunda was a British colony.
Oh, wow.
You know,
Zamunda.
Think about that. Zamunda really was a British colony.
Yeah.
Because even like you got the royal family, King Joffrey Jofer, his queen, Eleon.
Mm-hmm.
It's modeled after like European.
Right. Royalty. Right.
You know,
European hierarchy. It really is. Yeah, gotcha. Yeah.
And I guess I could pivot right there and say one of the positives of this type of propaganda that Hollywood puts out is that, but it's going to require work on our part as a community and as a collective in terms of educating our own children, is that whenever Hollywood comes out with something, that should motivate us to really kick it up a notch and really start to do some other study. Because if they're putting this out, they don't want us to think about something else. And one of the things that, you know, this movie makes me think about and has made me think about for several years now is I started to think about King Joffe Joffer, played by James Earl Jones, being a fictional character. But something in my mind just tells me, like, yo, that's he reminds me of Mobutu, right?
A Mobutu Seki Seko?
Yeah.
Of Zaire. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he reminds me of him.
Yeah.
Like, so if we can use it as a positive and leverage it and say, okay, well, you want Hollywood, you want to put this out. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Mobutu. Let's talk about the Congo. Let's talk about 1961. Let's talk about the rightful president of the Congo, Patrice Lumumba, mm-hmm. who was assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
And Mobutu was instrumental in that happening.
Yep.
And then Mobutu became a puppet for the United States and for the European nations so they could go in, so they would have free range to go into Congo and steal whatever they want, rape and pillage, mm-hmm. you know, without having to even really, really be aggressive about it, you know. That's an opportunity for us to start having those conversations and start taking it from the fictional on the screen to the reality, you know, the real history of what, like, of what's going on and what really did happen. You know, we look at like characters and figures like, you know, Mobutu, who, while the people in the Congo were starving for years, and he's like a billionaire basically,
mm-hmm.
you know, just getting money, you know, from the United States government and, you know, European yeah. governments.
And then he had all that money in Swiss bank accounts and in Belgium and so forth. Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So that, you know, that it makes me think about, you know, the true geopolitics of, you know, of the African continent, you know. It also makes me think about, you know, another opportunity for us, you know, to have conversation about Thomas Sankara, you know, because Thomas Sankara actually came to America in real life, right? Not under the same pretenses that Prince Hakim did. He wasn't, you know, looking for a wife, you know, but he came to America in 1984. And, you know, there's a lecture that he gave, and there's a book that, you know, people can grab called Thomas Sankara Speaks, the Burkina Faso Revolution, 1983 to 1987. And if you're unaware, Thomas Sankara was the leader of the Burkinabe Revolution, which took place in what was formerly the Upper Volta region.
Mm-hmm.
It was a French colony, which borders Ghana.
Right.
French colony borders Ghana. And it became, the name was changed to Burkina Faso. Thomas Sankara came up in the military. He was trained. He actually went to military school in Madagascar. So I remember reading about that, and I'm thinking, like, wow, like, you know, this is a connection I can make, you know, for my son when he was younger. Because at the time, like, I think Madagascar, the movie was out, and that was one of his favorite movies.
Okay, right.
So it's like, hey, cool. So I'm gonna meet you where you at. I'm gonna use Hollywood. I'm gonna leverage Hollywood
mm-hmm.
to teach, you know, people what we really need to know.
Right.
Right. So now, boom, we're gonna go right to Thomas Sankara, and he was in the country Madagascar for real, right? Thomas Sankara comes to the United States in 1984 because he was going to speak at the United Nations and be critical of what was going on the continent and throughout the world. But the day before that, he went to Harlem and he gave a lecture to some people in Harlem. And as a matter of fact, it's a brother, an elder. I don't know the brother's name, but he's affiliated with ASCAC, but he's one of the people that the brother up in Jersey, Ali McBride, he's close with him. They're part of African Echoes up in Jersey, right? Their study group and whatnot. And I remember him talk. I went to African Echoes at one point, and I heard the brother talk. He was talking about being at that speech that's transcribed and is concluded within this book. And he said somebody in the audience, you know, raised their hand and said, well, you know, how are we supposed to deal with imperialism? How are we supposed to deal with colonialism? He said he unsnapped his holster. took out his
45 caliber
pistol. I say, this is how we deal with colonialism.
Yeah, like, I say, we know, fight. But
Sankara was educated.
Yes,
and he was trained. But at the same time,
mm-hmm.
he knew what time it was, right?
Mm-hmm.
And another thing he said in that lecture was, he wanted, in terms of his Pan African vision, he wanted Harlem to be the White House of that Pan African movement. Mm-hmm. He wanted Harlem to be their White House. That was his major, like, you know, takeaway within that conversation. And then that also, you know, so again, that, you know, reading about that, And then just thinking about our exemplars and where they are and what they're doing, that made me think about, like, you know, Harlem and how Harlem has been kind of framed in the past 10 years, past 15 years. It's in the context of commercial rap music,
yeah,
where you look at, like, you know, the black men that have come out of Harlem and have been promoted, like, you know, the Camerons and the Jim Jones and the Dipsets, people that I used to listen to, that I was major fans of as well. But when you get older, again, you put away boyish things, you start to be more critical, and you're like, come on, man, like, this black man came from the continent and was trying to push Pan-Africanism, trying to push unity, trying to push real growth. He wasn't just really just, you know, out here just rapping, talking about, you know, exploiting the people, just getting money at any means, you know, at any expense of anybody. So again, we got to have these conversations so, you know, our children will be able to choose, you know, who they want to identify with and who they want to follow, you know, who they want
right.
to, you know, be able to relate to, you know. So Sankara, so, and again, that's in 84. Unfortunately, you know, Sankara gets, you know, assassinated by the French. Mm-hmm. And of course, like, you know, I'm sure the United States was involved in that because they all work together.
Yeah.
You know, they're right. like a squad.
It's just like what happened with Muammar Gaddafi. That was a collaborative between, I mean, I think the vast amount of blood on the hands of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. But you had McCone, you had, no, not McCone, I think Chirac at the time. And of course, Blair with the UK. So, and then of course, once they did what they did to him, and how they did it. Well, number one, they had to set him up. You know, they had to put the propaganda out there that he was such a brutal dictator and taking all the wealth from the people and not sharing anything with just him and his family and doing this, that, and the other. So, you know, you've seen these things on TV all the time and in the news. I will never forget. I said, yeah, they about to set him up. And the people will be justified within the people. They feel it is justified that he is eliminated and he is taken out because of what this country said he was about. But of course we know the real story. I knew the real story before before they took him out. And of course that story is that he was beloved by the people of Libya because he provided for the people of Libya. You know, if you were married, you got a home and so forth, and make sure you had a job, make sure you had a gas for your car. I mean, what he did was the model of what countries who have wealth should do, and that is shared amongst the people, you know? And right. but yet he was perceived as some evil dictator whereby they can justify taking him out. In fact, Barack said one thing he regretted was doing that, and I was like, yeah, right, you know? You know, he regretted that he took out Muammar Gaddafi. But of course, you know, just like this piece I saw with this Caucasian, don't know the dude's name, but he said the West had to take out Muammar Gaddafi because by introducing this gold coin, this gold dinar, would upset particularly the petrodollar that was circulated around the world, you know, and so they can't allow that to happen. It's just like that Caucasian I mentioned to you before, Howard Nicholas. We cannot allow Africa to be independent. We cannot allow Africa to be self-sustaining. And you know, that can't happen. Africa must remain poor. Africa must continue to look at the West and beg us for this, that, and the other. They cannot do things. They cannot particularly become producers. They cannot become producers. They cannot begin to make products and so forth and to compete with other worlds, because by doing so, that would cripple Europe, ultimately also crippling the United States, you know.
Yeah, and I also, you know, I want to kind of add on to what you were saying. I'm not going to center this conversation around Barack Obama, but, you know, since you mentioned him, I was thinking about him while I was reading that actual speech that's in Thomas Sankara Speaks. The Burkina Faso Revolution, 1983 to 1987. And I was thinking about, like, how, you know, the fandom that, you know, he possesses and how, you know, how popular he is. And I've thought about many reasons over the years, you know, of why, you know, he is so popular. And, you know, at one point, you know, before I did more analysis, you know, I was a fan, you would say, like back in 2008. But then again, you know, once you start doing analysis, you start doing more study, and you start to look beyond the individual and start to look at systems and what roles the people play within systems. then you make a better judgment. You're like, okay, well, okay, I see what party he's playing. I get it. And one of the things that I think had people very enamored by him while he was president, and even now, still to this day, right? Even now, mm-hmm. still enamored, is this idea that, you know, and there's nothing wrong with this concept of wanting to see a black man in a position of power. In and of itself, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, right? Nothing wrong with that. You figure, okay, the presidency of the United States is a position of power. Cool. You put a black man there, a man that, you know, we identify with because he looks like a black man, right? Even if his politics don't align with blackness or whatever, but that's another conversation. There's nothing wrong with that. I won't take that away from nobody. I want to see that. A lot of people want to see that. We should see that. Black boys and black girls should see that. However, when you start thinking about kind of like how there's a void, and if you're not used to something, you know, and then everything seems, and then somebody can just give you something, and you're like, oh, wow, this is the first time this ever happened, or I got to hold on to this. It becomes an emotional thing. And it's like, I got to hold on to this because I've never seen this before. But I'm reading this speech that Sankara was giving. So I'm reading about Sankara, who mm-hmm. was a black man, who was a leader of a nation, fighting against imperialism, not promoting it, right? You know, like Obama did. In the speech, he mentions J.J. Rawlings. J.J. Rawlings mm-hmm. over in Ghana.
Mm-hmm.
And it's talking about them collaborating together and how the militaries were training together. Instead of having, you know, a foreign European nation come in and help to train their military, he said, nah, Ghana is another African nation. Mm-hmm. We're going to work together. We're going to join our militaries. We're going to train our military together and do it that way. Again, promoting Pan-Africanism, right? In that same speech, he also mentions that he's saddened because he had communicated with Maurice Bishop the year before. Now, if you're unfamiliar with Maurice Bishop, Maurice Bishop was the leader
Grenada.
Of,
in Grenada, the green. Grenada,
the
green jewel.
Grenada is an island in the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
Also happens to be the island where Malcolm X's mother migrated to the United States from Grenada. Maurice Bishop, revolutionary leader. Mm-hmm. Him and many of his associates were assassinated in 1983 by the United States government.
Ronald Reagan.
And mm-hmm. Sr. Right, George Bush. Yeah. See all these, and these are. I'm convinced that these are things that a lot of people just don't know. Because you're like, okay, so Maurice Bishop was a positive black man trying to make change for the community, for everybody, for the world, for African people globally. Right?
Mm-hmm.
He's assassinated by Reagan, George Bush Sr. But then you got years later, everybody's so happy when they see George Bush Jr. all buddy buddy with Michelle Obama. People making jokes on the internet about that. I'm like, nah, that's not cool. Like, but I understand. I think it's because people aren't aware of that history. And
right.
They don't understand those geopolitical realities. So
right.
I think, again, that puts the onus back on us as a community to start to do a better job, you know, me and everybody else to do a better job of educating our children and our youth. So it's like when the mainstream or the white power structure or, the European countries or the United States or whoever, or NATO or whoever, when they come out and give you this black guy and say, or this black guy, this black woman, mm-hmm. and say, here, this should be your hero.
Be you very say, no, leery of that. Be very leery of what they present to you.
Mm-hmm. I'm not impressed by that.
Yeah.
Right? Because then we can go back even further. You say, well, Nkrumah was the president of Ghana when Ghana became independent in 1958. So this guy you're giving me don't impress me. I already know it, and I know what this is supposed to look like, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then even when the British government pushes forth the coup, right, to get Nkrumah out of there, Sekou Touré over in Guinea says, listen, come over here, come rock with me. We could be co-presidents because we're trying to push Pan-Africanism. It's mm-hmm. not about our individual nation.
Right.
It's about us pushing Pan-Africanism. So
exactly.
We could be co-presidents. So that's my example. So then a person that has that background and understands that history and understands that political history and that reality, then they're like, you give them a Barack Obama, and it's like, okay, and, right? we know what the standard is.
Yeah.
So then we can say, okay, do they measure up to that standard? Now, if you don't know what the standard is, then when they give you that, then you kind of have no choice. And like I said, it's nothing wrong with wanting to see a black man in power. But we have to look deeper and do the analysis and say, okay, well, why is this a big deal to you? It's because you don't know anything else. You know, the same thing with music. We can say the same thing in terms of like popular music. Like today, you know, a lot of, you know, our young people, our teenagers are listening to the current music. And as adults, we sit back and we're like, yo, why do y'all like this trash? Because I think we haven't done a good enough job in terms of letting them know, like, listen, when the 90s, when these people were rapping, they had different content, different lyrical skill, right? different style, different flow and whatnot.
And also more importantly, a different message.
Yeah, different yes. message, mm-hmm. but they don't know about that. So they don't mm-hmm. have any frame of reference. So that becomes the issue. And again, but doing the reading, and it always goes back to education, doing the reading lets you know what the history is. So then when somebody comes out and says, here, take this. This is valuable. You mm-hmm. can then assess for yourself, like, yo, wait, hold on a second. How valuable is this? Because I already know that this was already going on. So this ain't like, you know, this ain't no big deal. You know what I mean? So see what we're doing right here. We're leveraging, you know, what they're doing. Cause I was motivated to think more about this movie because Hollywood is putting out Coming to America 2 next week. And now we're having a conversation. Hopefully somebody's listening and they'll be motivated to go and do some research on Thomas Sankara, do some research on Patrice Lumumba, J.J. Rawlings, Maurice Bishop, you know, mm-hmm. in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. You know, these black people that were part of communities and collectives that were really fighting against neocolonialism and against imperialism. Because what often happens is the mainstream or the white power structure, they talk about hashtag black excellence. A lot of times they give us examples that are complicit with
right.
imperialism and neocolonialism. Mm-hmm. And then they're out here, people that are out here making a lot of money and have credentials and have positions, right? So they can be wealthy and take care of them, take care of their family materially, but the masses of us still starve, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So these are things that, you know, we gotta think about.
And you know, well, listen, we're gonna take a break. When we come back from the break, you can join this conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Also, we have many people on the call in, and so you know to hit star twice, and you can become a part of this conversation. So we're going to be right back. You stay with us. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Yeah.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays. Once again, this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And all the times they're going to give our Eastern times. On Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds, Public Affairs Programming with Brother Jihad Ahmed. And then that's followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then that's followed by from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, from 7 to 9, Melanin Live with host Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan. And then on Fridays, 8 p.m. on Fridays, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. That's tonight at 8 p.m. Saturday, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then on Saturday evening, from 7 to 9 p.m., the Sankofa Elders Council. Sunday at 7 p.m. on Sunday, it's once again Time for an Awakening. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We're going to get back to the conversation. Remember, we have many people on the hold. If you want to ask a question, or you have a question, comment, or concern, you hit star twice. That lets me know that you want to ask a question or you have a comment. We're talking with Brother Akil Parker, educator and ASCAC member in the Philadelphia area. Brother Akil.
Yes, sir.
All right.
So again, again, if I could just continue on, and again, like the whole purpose of this is, you know, it's done out of love for our people, you know, especially for the youth.
Exactly. So, everything. Exactly.
That's what media literacy is really about. We just want people to know all sides of the story, not just the one side that's marketed, right? So then once you know all sides of the story, then you can make a better judgment. You can make a better assessment of that type of media that's being presented to you, right? And I think in terms of moving forward with the conversation, two of our, one ancestor and one elder comes to mind. The one being Dr. Clark, right? Dr. John Henry Clark. And I remember him saying at one point on one of his lectures that this quote, blackness, it's very relevant to today where everybody, you know, it's very marketable. Blackness is very marketable right now. And blackness is very, very profitable right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Dr. Clark said, black is beautiful means nothing without black power.
That's right, without being black and powerful.
The 70s or the 80s, yeah. You know, black is, I mean, when you think about like, okay, even back in the 70s, you have the Afro is a representation of African culture. That's a beautiful thing, right? But if then you have Europeans that own a company that produce Afro Sheen, then yeah, we can promote ourselves and our beauty, right? But there's no economic power connected to that. We still gotta go to the white man, right? To be beautiful and, you know, to keep our Afros, you know, on point and legit, right? That's a problem. I think about that. And that also reminded me of another quote from Imam, political prisoner, Imam Jamil Alameen, formerly H-Rap Brown, who ran with Kwame Ture back in the 60s in SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And he was on Like It Is with the late Gil Noble. Mm-hmm. I think it was probably like 1969. And the clip, the interview was actually on YouTube. It's in black and white. It's on YouTube. It's about 20, 30 minutes long. But one of the things he said, and I remember the first time I ever saw this interview, and when he said it, it hit me like a ton of bricks, because he said, quote, the man will let you start a dashiki store or a bookstore as long as there's no political empowerment dynamic. Because, you know, he says, and then he goes on further to say, if you keep people thinking culturally, they won't start thinking politically. Now, of course, I believe that's a both and situation. We need both. We need political awareness and we need cultural awareness.
No doubt.
But a lot of times, our culture is weaponized against us to keep us thinking, oh, well, you know, just be black and beautiful. Just be black and beautiful. Let us control everything. Let us keep control of the money. Let us keep control of the institutions. Let us keep control of the schools. You know, you want to be a singer, a dancer, or whatever, an author. You know, you can express yourself all you want, but we're, as long as we get to sign the checks, as long as we get to decide on the distribution deals, as long as we get to do that. So that's the power dynamic, right? And then, you know, so when Coming to America comes on, and, you know, watch, you see the, you hear the music in the background, kind of sounds like the Lion King a little bit. You see all the trees. You see the beautiful aesthetics, you know, what we think, you know, agrarian or rural areas in the continent of Africa may look like. You know, it all feels good. Even with the initial wedding ceremony, they got the African drums. They got the sisters out there dancing, you know. That's how we get down at, like, ASCAT conferences. And, like, a lot of, you know, with the drumming and everything. That's a beautiful thing. But that's kind of like, it becomes cosmetic in that space, in the space of that movie. And again, it's nothing wrong with drumming and the dancing. We need that. That's part of the culture. But it should be connected with some type of empowerment. And if it's not, we oftentimes just kind of settle and we're satisfied. And we'll watch a program like that and we'll say, you know, well, at least I got to see the sisters dancing. At least I got to hear the African drum. You know, that was cool. And it's like a lot of us might feel like that's enough, but it's really not enough. It's not enough at all, because there's no power component to that. There's no power dynamic to that. There's no economic power connected with that. No political power connected with that. It's just like, here, you know, these black, like in 88, you know, Paramount's thinking, well, you know what, kind of do something to push back on this Pan-Africanism movement. We got to help to promote neo-colonialism. So we got to give them some type of propaganda, you know. They just like to be seen. I mean, everybody likes to be seen.
Yeah.
So let's give them a movie, you know. So that's another thing for us to think about. Definitely, how culture can be used against us.
And also too, it even though there's a cultural expression, but it is Western in its presentation.
Yeah, You know? And another thing about it too is like, so they give us in the movie, they give us the drums at the wedding ceremony, give us the drums, give us the dances. But then if you look before that, and again, you know, if you're looking at this through a critical lens, right, when Akeem wakes up in the morning, he's awoken by not classical music, because we shouldn't use the term classical music, because that implies that European concert music,
right,
is a standard, right?
Right.
So we have to not use that term. We can call it European concert music. Just like we can call what is typically called jazz, we can call that African concert music if we want to. You know, we can have some conversations about that. I know those conversations have already been going on for years, but we don't want to privilege their music by calling it classical, period. Like, we don't want to do that, right? He's awoken to European concert music, right? Mm-hmm. And then later, when Semi comes to pick him up, before even the part when Semi comes to pick him up, he's at this long-ass table. That's not African. That don't even make no sense. that's a European thing. Like, why would you, like, you're sitting there with your mom and your dad all the way down the table?
Yeah.
Like, you want to break bread, you break bread with your people, you're going to sit close up tight so y'all can have a conversation. That don't even make sense. That's why, you know, it was cool when he got up and was like, you know what, this is ridiculous. Why am I sitting all the way at the end of this table? Let me go holler at my parents, right? But then Semi comes to pick him up. He's about to go play polo.
Which is another, right? European, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. It's like all these little symbols of, oh, I get it. That's why I said I entitled the article, Zamunda Was a British Colony.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, damn, I never noticed it. And even like toward the end, when, you know, Mr. McDowell is all hype, John Amos is all hype, like, baby, he's got his own money. No, I mean it. He's got his own money. Like, pulls out the bill. It's 100 pounds.
Right.
It's 100 pounds. That's the British currency.
Mm-hmm.
That's the British currency. So these are all the things, like, these are all the subtle things. Because remember, like, a lot of us, we're not going to pick up on that. But we see it, and we do internalize it. It seeps into our subconscious. And then instead of us thinking, so we think, okay, well, if you're an African nation, then you should exist as a colony, right? Because they didn't have their own currency, right? He was woken to Europe. He was wealthy. He's a prince. He's awoken to brothers playing the violin and the cello and all that. And that's cool. Again, there's nothing wrong with, you know, playing those instruments. That's fine. But what's the larger message, though? You know, and then playing polo. Okay, you want to play polo, that's fine. But again, what's the larger message?
Mm-hmm.
What does that say? Like, African people don't have their own games? We got to play polo?
Well, see, because the thing is that if you want to reach the real status, if you want to reach the height of heights, it is being just like Europeans. It is modeling yourself after what Europeans do, their style, their clothes, their cars, the flaunting of their wealth. If that's what you want, you know, and of course that's how we behave here in America, and of course, unfortunately, that's how we behave in the diaspora and on the continent because of the dominance of Europeans, you know, controlling the narrative. In controlling what you see, you know, they have been in, you know, they have been in fact, what's really detrimental, we probably need to do this another program on what the European Jews and the imagery they have portrayed with Metro Goldwyn Mayer and all the other stuff that they have done to put a negative image out of us through
Al Jolson, the hero of the Ashkenazi Jewish community, was famous for putting on blackface.
Right.
Famous actor putting on blackface.
Right, singing Mammy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, also they came through with the Louis Vuitton luggage, got all this Louis Vuitton luggage. So that's status.
Yeah.
And that's also, so again, you talk about power. It's like, okay, that's status. That's seen as success, right, in a Western dynamic and in a Western concept and in a Western mindset.
Mm-hmm.
But what that does is that's like a capitulation to European economic nationalism. It's like Louis Vuitton is a French company.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say, okay, you're wealthy, you are the prince of a nation. You control a nation of people, right? But you still have to bow down to European economic nationalism. So when you buy that and you promote that, and again, this is idea, because we understand it's a fictional movie, but, you know, sometimes, you know, the fiction is how people get their socialization. You know, they get their understanding of the world around them, and they internalize these ideas and these messages. So, you know, you're doing that, you're bound down to that nationalism, and, you know, you're showing that, okay, in order for us to have any type of status, we can only have status in the context of what Europeans are doing, what Europeans are creating, and what they're making, and what they're selling us, and what they're giving us. And there's no real, we got to start creating. And even like, you know, earlier on, I should have said this earlier on, but I got sidetracked. So thinking about Zamunda as a nation, right? Mm-hmm. And thinking about Thomas Sankara when he came to the United States, or thinking about, you know, I also thought about Fidel Castro. When Fidel Castro came to Harlem, also came to Harlem and met with Malcolm in 1960.
Yeah, right? at the Teresa Hotel.
Exactly. They're in the movie. They're in the limo. They got the police escorts. They stayed at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. They got their flag waving, right? Mm-hmm. They got their flag. The Zamunda flag is waving. So that shows, okay, so the United States is I guess, allied with or comfortable with the nation of Zamunda. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure that, you know, Sankara did not get that type of treatment when he came.
I'm quite sure. Exactly.
Not that he wanted it. And I'm sure, and I know Castro because I read about it in the book. Mm-hmm. The book, Fidel and Malcolm, right? Mm-hmm. But they talk about, like, how, you know, Castro didn't even really have a place to stay. That's why he ended up in Harlem with the people, mm-hmm. right? They didn't roll out no red carpet for him. So, again, that kind of shows, okay, so these types of leaders in real life, this is how they're regarded by this nation. But then in the movie, so you have a black leader. He's, you know, he's promoted. He's made to feel comfortable in the United States, traveling, you know, from Manhattan to Queens back to Manhattan. So again, and I think that's also why, like, I make my own inferences, and I'm like, you know, this guy reminds me of Mobutu. Like, mm-hmm. maybe that's what they was trying to do.
Yeah,
you know, or maybe it was like a Freudian slip. Maybe they weren't. Maybe it was. Maybe it wasn't intentional. But I think we should start thinking about that. We should start thinking, like, okay, well, who? If this were real life, who would King Joffrey Jofer be? If this were real life, who would Prince Akeem be? Right? Mm-hmm. So we should start thinking like that.
Right. We have a caller.
I think these are the conversations that we should have with our children. And when Coming to America 2 comes up, you know, we'll probably watch it. It's probably going to be funny, but hopefully we'll be looking at it like more critically, you mm-hmm. know, not just taking in the jokes and just laughing, ha ha, you know, and just, you know, keeping it moving. Mm-hmm. But thinking critically, like, wait, hold up.
Because I think one thing that you're saying about that is that we need to have, just like even with Wakanda, we need to have an image that of brothers and sisters in success and running something independent of Caucasians. No, right. they're not interpolated in any way. It is totally independent of Caucasians, and we need to have that, you know. But if you're mirroring them, and you're acting just like them, you know, and how you present yourself and how you go about your business, you know, that's not independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty, you know. That's just another thing of imitation. Right. Now, we have a caller. Let's get this caller. Caller 334-414. 334. Good afternoon.
Peace.
Good afternoon, caller. 334. Caller.
Yo, can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
We got you. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah. Hey, all right. Sorry about that. I was on mute. Good afternoon, Brother Oshie, and it's a pleasure meeting you, Brother Parker. One of the things that I've been noticing on Netflix recently is a little series like Bridgerton that starts to emphasize some, like Queen Charlotte, right? And I kind of wonder, should we also look at with a critical eye some of these smaller bits and pieces that are coming across the TV airwaves? Because if it's Queen Charlotte today, right, then it may be Marie Christophe of Haiti next, right? And so I often wondered, eventually, why had there never been any kind of workup on Toussaint Louverture at all, and the kind of really redirecting what he did within this country. So should we also take under consideration these smaller little programs that we're starting to see across the TV airwaves, look at those critically? Also, you know, look at some other revolutionary fighters, et cetera, that came up and, you know, will any stories be created about them at all?
Well, I would say I love it, but You know, usually they don't talk about those who have resisted, those who put up a fight. They don't usually talk about those individuals, you know, and as a consequence, in fact, they don't want that even mentioned. You know, when I was in school, when I was going to school back in the day, quite a while ago, you know, when they did say something about us, it was George Washington Carver and Booker T. Washington. You didn't even hear about Frederick Douglass. You didn't hear about Harriet Tubman. Or, you know, or you didn't hear about anybody who resisted, anybody who put up a fight, you know. They didn't want you to learn that or know about that. We just wanted you to go along to get along, you see. So I like the idea, and I know, I think it's Danny Glover who has been trying to put a movie out on Toussaint, you know.
Okay.
And, you know, we need to have a movie out on Martin R. Delaney, you know. Yeah. There are many people in our history, you know, that we need to do the research and put the information out. I mean, many people had a problem with Harriet. You know, number one, because you know, because they had the brother being the catcher of her, you know, trying to catch her. And I think we all know that a brother could not be out in the countryside, you know, with guns and so forth, talking about, you know, he's a bounty hunter, you know. Yeah. You know, it's just being real. In the North or in the South, at that time, you know, sometime later, yes. But at that time, that wasn't happening. But, of course, once again, you have artistic licensing. That was part of the movie. And, of course, you were instructed within the movie's sake to hate him, you know. And I think that some Caucasian, you know what, I still haven't seen it. And I believe that Janelle Monáe's character was killed by him, but the Caucasian, he saves the day, you know, just like in Wakanda, the CIA helps save the day, you know. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Brother, question: I would add also that I think that we definitely should be critical of everything, and there's nothing we should not be critical of, right? Especially you know, living in this nation, we definitely got to be critical of everything. And also, I think too. We got to also remember, again, the words of Imam Jamil Alameen, formerly H. Rap Brown, anything that we don't control will be used as an enemy against us, or we'll use as a weapon against us, anything that we don't control. So then that pushes us to, so if we believe in his premise, which I do, is based on the evidence that we see all around us historically, that we got to figure out ways to take control. And also, in terms of when movies will really start to be produced and by us, and bankrolled by us, and distributed by us, when the education reaches a critical mass, because when you have you know, somebody might read a book about somebody, and then that one individual person might say, man, damn, like, why nobody made a movie about this brother? Or why nobody made a movie about this sister, right? That's one person. So more people receive that education, more people are talking about these individuals and the communities and the collectives that they were a part of. You got a lot of people like, yo, like, all right, so how are we gonna make this movie? And then people would just get out to it. But so again, it always comes to me. It always comes back to education, right? You know, what are we teaching our children? What are we teaching our young people? What type of conversations are we having with them? Are we taking advantage of all the opportunities we can to, you know, leverage and have some different conversations? Because I know next week when Coming to America 2 comes out, you know, there are gonna be some conversations about the movie, and that's fine. But a lot of the conversations are probably gonna be framed in a way where there's not going to be room for us to really leverage and push toward anything resembling any type of Pan-African nationalism in a lot of those conversations. But I think that's what we have to change also. We have to start having more conversations that lead us toward Pan-African nationalism. So if we say, okay, well, you know, like even in this conversation, I wanted to use this as an opportunity to say, not even really so much, I mean, we talk about Coming to America, but I'm trying to like leverage that and say, okay, well, this is what they gave us. Now this is what we also could be looking at. Now we could be looking at Thomas Sankara. Now we can talk about Maurice Bishop and all these things were happening in the 1980s. And I think that was intentional. These things were happening in the 1980s. Grenada Revolution, and then Maurice Bishop assassinated in 1983. Sankara comes to Harlem and comes to the UN in 1984. Samora Michelle, don't forget about him. I didn't mention him yet. Samora Michelle from Frelimo, Mozambique, fighting against the Portuguese, just like Amilcar Cabral was fighting against the Portuguese. Amilcar Cabral, Tatina Silla, and all those people were fighting against the Portuguese up in the Cape Verde Islands and Guinea-Bissau, right? So all these things were happening in the 1980s. Samora Michelle allegedly, mysteriously dies in a plane crash in 1986. I don't believe that there was anything accidental about that. Many people don't. This brother was also fighting against imperialism, fighting against neocolonialism. And then Sankara, you know, in 87, meets his demise. And that was spearheaded by the French because he was like, no, we're not going to bow down. You know, we're not going to bow down. We want independence. So this is the opportunity for us to start having these conversations because most of our people have never even heard of these people. You know, so once now we're introducing people and we're saying, okay, well, what were they really about? What did they do? And you know, this is an opportunity for us to create some narratives, and not even really. Let me take that back. Not create narratives, because a lot of times in the past, with their elders that were having these conversations,
right?
You know, in the 1970s and in the 1980s, you know, when Sankara was more prevalent, but there's like this kind of manufactured obscurity that these kind of exemplars experience so that young people won't be thinking the way they were thinking and won't be trying to push toward the things that they were pushing toward. It's an erasure that takes place. So we just got to kind of pull these people out of obscurity and make them household names. And, you know, we can do that. We can do that really at any moment.
And that's what we should
do. Thank you, Brother Parker.
Thank you, Brother Lus. Appreciate you, man. All right. I'll put you on hold. 646-646, good afternoon.
Hey, Hotep Oshi and to Brother Parker. Hey, Brother Parker, I got a quick question for you. What year did you sit in class with your mother at Hunter College?
It must have been like 1983. I think I was like 3 years old. I think she got her degree in 84. So yeah, like I think it must have been 83 or 84.
Hey, check this out. I may have seen you as a little kid.
You were in class at that time, Jay.
I went to Hunter during that time, and I took a class with Dr. Clark. So when you was a little kid, I probably saw you. You know, because when you said it last week, I was like, damn, man. I was in class during that time, and I was saying to myself, it could be a possibility that I may have seen him, you know, and your mother walking around. Now, during that time, if y'all were going to First World up there,
I don't know I've heard of First World, but I don't know if I ever went. I don't know if my parents ever took me to First World.
Well, First World was on Convent Avenue in Manhattan, where they, you know, was doing lectures and things like that. That's where I got a chance to meet like Greg Carr, Mimbarney, and all of those individuals during that time. Because, you know, like you were saying, it was a heyday of consciousness going on back then. You know, you would have the lectures and all of that. You would have, you know, all of the greats and stuff coming out. But that's where I became aware of it, because Dr. Clark was teaching at Hunter at that time. And, you know, he was like, in a sense, a rock star, as one would say.
You
want to
use that term, huh?
Oh, yeah. Everybody tried to get in Dr. Clark's class at that time. And sometimes, you know, people would just sit in, you know what I mean? Because, you know, Dr. Clark was no joke, man. Yeah. He would every now and then, you know, one of those Europeans would ask a stupid question or say something dumb, and they would get a slight spanking. You know what I mean? You know his favorite quote.
Yeah,
I don't debate. I teach.
That's right.
You know what I mean? But
I'm my equal with all others.
Yeah,
that's
you're
right.
Not my equal and all that. Nah, Dr. Clark. Dr. Clark was no joke, man. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's why, you know, I laugh, you know, when people start talking about history and things of that nature, because in all honesty, whenever you're dealing with a white man regarding anything, it's propaganda. Because that's the whole thing with these movies. It's propaganda. That's why you'll never, like you said, see any movie about Toussaint Louverture or anybody that's a revolutionary in regards to dealing with the oppressor. But they'll give you somebody like Shaka Zulu, but they'll twist it in things of that nature. But they'll never give you any movies about, say, Sister Zinga or someone like that. So, I mean, you know, it's really, you know, propaganda, but it's dangerous also because you, I don't know if you've seen this movie, brother, American Skin.
No, I haven't heard of it. I haven't seen it.
Well, let me tell you something. That's a dangerous, dangerous, dangerous movie, man. And, you know, it's done by an individual who we don't like to call out, a white woman lover. You know what I mean? At some point in time, we're going to have to honestly say to our community that if you don't have enough respect for yourself and for African women to marry them, then you ain't no real ally. Now, everybody wants to talk about Sidney Poitier and Harry Belafonte and all that. Nah, you're an enemy. You're an enemy. And I'm sick of playing that game with them because now you got a situation to whereas they're making interracial relationships, homosexuality, and every type of other perverted freakness a norm, in a sense. And what it's doing is it's destroying and diluting our culture because we just not in tune. So now you're in a situation to where as we as a people are deeming that filth as one would say paranormal. And that's the dangerousness of it. So whereby you have these type of issues put into play. But I mean, as far as American that's American Skin, that's a real dangerous movie. Yeah. Now coming to America, if you think about it, you know, what are the cultural reverences to those of us who don't have consciousness, who don't understand some of the symbolic things that are put forward? I mean, because if you really want to be honest about it, the movie is a jokey jokester movie.
By intent.
I mean,
that's by the intent. Listen, Jay.
Yeah.
I have a number of calls I want to take in. Okay.
All right. So put me on hold.
All right. I appreciate it, Jay. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Can I respond?
Sure. Please.
Well, not really respond, but
please do.
Another thing in terms of my critique, I guess I would say in the movie that I never thought about when I was younger, but in many moments, the movie again, I see it as neo-colonial, but counter Pan African. Right, in many ways, because in a lot of situations, a lot of moments where, and of course, you know, I'm clear. Like, I don't expect that from Paramount Pictures. I don't expect Paramount Pictures to promote Pan-African nationalism. I don't expect that at all. I'm not delusional, right? But just in terms of us knowing and Black people understanding, African people understanding what's going on, there were basically it was a lot of scenes and a lot of moments where it was like, you know, these actualized, you know, African booty scratcher jokes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they come rent the apartment. He's like, you know, it's a lot of flies and you got an insect problem. You boys from Africa, y'all are probably used to that, right? They go to the St. John's game, go to the St. John's basketball game. You know, what type of games y'all play? Catch the monkey, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And as I say that, I'm laughing, right? Yeah. Because, you know, when you watch the movie, it's funny, right?
Yeah. Because they're going to do the same thing. They're going to do the same thing particularly when they go back to the barbershop. You know,
mm-hmm.
They're really going to get slammed, you know.
You say, yeah, it's Kunta from upstairs, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and what that does is, you know, it's a counter-Pan-African movie. And there was something else, again, because, you know, I'm looking at things through a mathematical lens, right? The after the scene, when Samuel L. Jackson comes up in the McDowell's, they, you know, they foil his attempt to, you know, rob
the place, right?
And then John Amos, Mr. McDowell's, like, you know, he calls them his African connection. So I'm sitting there listening. I'm like, okay, African connection. Now, here's the question. Is Simeon Akeem the African connection, just the two of them?
Or is he saying that himself, Mr. McDowell, Simi, and Akeem are an African connection? Hmm. From my understanding and my interpretation, that the African connection is just Simi and Akeem, and he's seen the two of them are seen as like a possession of his,
right?
Because they're his employees. It's not okay. Well, we all African. You know, I just, you know, got dropped off on the boat, you know, so I'm over here now. And, you know, now, you know, y'all just migrated over here from, you know, y'all continental Africans. I'm an African in America. And, you know, we all in this together, brother. I need you in a domestic capacity, like Eddie Murphy said. Mm-hmm. Oh, I forgot I was in a domestic capacity, right? I need you to come to my house and serve drinks to these, you know, some of my friends. And you notice all them white folks that was in that party too, right? So, you know, I need to serve drinks to these white folks that, you know, I got to schmooze with, you know, mm-hmm. because I want to be successful. I want to be a successful entrepreneur and a successful business owner in, you know, in Queens, New York, right? So even that concept, like, you know, so how do we define the African connection? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So right. these are things that, you know, we got to think about. And these are the conversations we got to have with our children when these movies come on. We gotta be challenging them to think about these things. Like, yo, African connection. What you mean by that? Like, are they all three of them connected together, or is it, you know, just Simi and Akeem are connected because they from Zamunda, and they work together,
right?
And they're basically beneath me, you know. So just something I just thought about too.
Right. That's always the thinking beyond what is being implied. You know. We have a caller, Sean, brother Sean. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon. Hey, I just want to say thank you to your guests. I just want to make a point about Thomas Sankara, right? The people, you know, of Burkina Faso, they overthrew the man who overthrew Thomas Sankara. You know what I'm saying? They burned down the parliament. They were tired of Blaise Compaoré for 27 years.
Yeah,
they were tired of him for 27 years. The way that, I mean, Thomas Sankara was on the ground and he really believed it, if he could make his country good, he can make Africa good. And all he was trying to say is that you just have to be self-sufficient. And you know, mm-hmm. I mean, we all know that Blaise went to France, was just a puppet. He was a puppet for France. Mm-hmm. And the people of Burkina Faso was tired of that. And they didn't tolerate that. They overthrew him because they loved Thomas Sankara. They loved their country. They loved what was not Blaise. Do you understand what I'm saying? And so when I just said a lot of this newfound like understanding of Thomas Sankara is that Thomas Sankara was the real and a fake ass nigga supposed to be on his team took him down. And the people recognized that, and that realism had that force through Blaise to keep down the people. I mean, Thomas Sankara was a true patriotism. He did in 4 years Thomas Sankara did in 4 years what Blaise could in 97. I just wanted to make that point because Thomas Sankara is the real.
Yeah.
And I mean, people might say he was a Marxist just because a black man reads. You know what I'm saying? What Karl Marx may have read, picked up a book and read eight chapters, and does that make you a Marxist? I mean, capitalism is not just necessarily just like, you know, just like getting over, but you do have to somehow, like, even if it's as a collective, like, you know, build up.
Sean, what they have done, what this society has done, particularly Western society, made capitalism, Marxism, communism, socialism, all of these are evil words. These are bad words. You've seen that in this past election, you know, what the political right was doing.
Yeah, but I know that Karl Marx was not for Africans. Even,
right.
I mean, I don't mean to like overdo it, but I mean, you had a caller who had a class with Dr. Clark. I mean, I'm just knowing that Dr. Clark had once said that Karl Marx said in that, you know, just because they are even Europeans that like we, you know what I'm saying? I'm not a Marxist and I would never will be. I understand that African people can make money and can like not do it. You can either capitalism to me is either you get ahead or you get over. If I use my head to get ahead, if I go out here and outthink and outplant, if I go out here and out if I'm like more agriculture or more product, and I get a bounty from trade, that's not necessarily capitalism. I'm using my head to get ahead. I'm not trying to divert the conversation, but my point is that Thomas Sankara was the real in that he was really trying to get his people to like at least collectively build wealth. And if he knew that he could do that, he could get the rest of Africa, because I mean, Burkina Faso is like kind of landlocked. It's like in Africa. You know what I'm saying? It's not like around the coast. It's like, look, if Tom Carr could be, if I could say like, look, I'm independently African. I don't need anything from the outside world. And if you can, we can do it. We all can do it. And then an insider basically trades out to France. You know what I'm saying? That's the tragedy, because them people they loved him.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, and Sean, the people love Gaddafi as well. We got some other callers, brother Sean. Appreciate you, Brian.
Thank you. Call, bro. And then real quick though, that, you know, I see the parallel there. That happens often. Is even, again, I mentioned Patrice Lumumba earlier, like Mobutu was his man. Mobutu mm-hmm. was his man. But mm-hmm. you know, Mobutu, you know, sold out and said, you know, I'm gonna go with the West. Mm-hmm. We'll go with the West. We're gonna get Lumumba out of here. And sure, I'll be your puppet. Yes, mm-hmm. yes, a boss. I'll do what you say.
Yeah,
you know, give me a couple of dollars. You know, I don't care about these people. Them ain't my people. Like that's the choice that Mobutu made. Mobutu like gave in to neo-colonialism, capitalism, you know, imperialism. He gave into it. So again, I mean, that's another important conversation in terms of like nation building. Because if we're talking about nation building, then we're gonna have to have some very difficult conversations.
Definitely, we definitely do because some people need to be outed.
Yeah.
And particularly today,
yeah. So we have to figure out ways for there to be consequences so we can avoid and prevent those type of things from happening. Because you figure, like, cause at one point, you know, Sankara is like, okay, Blase Compaoré, that's my man. You know, we're doing this together. We're pushing Pan Africanism, and then the outcome, you know, things turn out how they do. Mm-hmm. At one point, Lumumba's like, you know, Mobutu, that's my guy. And, you know, things turn out how they do. So they got to be some type of structures in place or some kind of way to vet. Maybe we need to learn how to vet people better, or I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. But at least it's a conversation that we need to have.
It would definitely.
We need to think very deeply about in terms of protecting what we build.
Well, Dr. Clark said, you know, we must have the ability to include and exclude. And unfortunately, we don't have that ability. You know, either you are with us or you're against us. You know, that's why I advocate throwing down the gauntlet and saying either we're African. I ain't talking about being black. You want to be black, you stay your ass here. But if you want to be African, you come with us. Okay? I make that distinction between black. I know people use that synonymously, you know. But I don't. I don't. Because, in fact, when I see the word black, I automatically use the word African. You know? Because I know there are cats that are black who definitely do not want to be African, but they want to be, they don't want to be white. At least that's what they feel. Cause by being black, you know, they cool, they way they dress. They want the money. Many of them they're capitalists. They want the cars. They want the materialism. They want to live in secluded areas, gated communities and so forth. They black. They don't want to be African. You know, they don't, sure in hell don't want no African name, don't wear nothing African, and probably definitely don't want to look like or be with somebody African. More than likely they sleep Caucasian because they black. And I'm saying for us as a people, let's throw the gauntlet and say we are African people. We are Africans. What I read in the Inye Sesim was talking about what Baba Baruti presents, talking about we are African. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, speaking of that, I mean, since we're talking about movies, I mean, that's why that concept right there, that's why Trey had to go live with his pop on Boys in the Hood.
Yeah.
Because he told him, I ain't from Africa, you from Africa, African booty scratcher.
Yeah.
Trey was like, oh, I know better. Mm-hmm. I know better. Nah, we ain't going to do that. We're not going to do that in here. You're not going to disrespect the heritage. We could be cool, but we got to blow your hands up. That's a problem now.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So yeah, and again, so even when we watching a movie like Boys in the Hood, that's very significant. Like that's a very significant part of the movie. I think a lot of us, myself included, when we originally watch those movies, we know that part is significant, but we don't know how significant it really is,
mm-hmm.
because that really encapsulates like the choice that you make. You know,
Because a lot of times it's like the world and the mainstream media will dictate to you that Africans aren't winning. But you're like, nah, I don't want to be on that team. They're not winning. Mm-hmm. You know? But then once you know, you start to know your history, you're like, okay, well, we might not be winning right now.
Right.
But we will be.
Right. But see, and see, my thing is as well is once we know that history, but also too, in this present moment, Africa, the continent, still has more resources than any place on the planet. And that is ours. And the problem is that all those outside of us want to keep us from establishing that together with Africans on the continent. They want to prevent that from happening, you know. We got some more callers. If you want to get in on this conversation, hit star twice. Hit star twice. We got a lot of people on the panel here, but if you want to hit star twice and get in on the conversation, I'm talking with Brother Akil Parker, educator out of math educator. You don't see too many math educators. Math educator out of Philadelphia, and ASCAP member. So.
And we're trying to use mathematics to develop our critical thinking so we can get liberated, not so we can get STEM jobs working for the white folks.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what we're trying to use math for. I want to be very clear about that, because again, we talk about marketing. That's how math is marketed. Like, you know, you want your children to do well in math so they can go become engineers, you know, become architects and computer scientists and all that. That's great, but we have to start taking that talent and using it to nation build.
Yeah,
our nation.
Well, that's
this nation, right? Else's nation. We got to be clear about that, because a lot of times that gets lost in the conversation, never gets discussed.
Right.
We have to be very explicit and have these conversations with our children. Like, yeah, you know how to do algebra, you good. You know how to do calculus, you can do trig. You can tell, you know what sine, cosine, you know SOHCAHTOA TOA and all that. Cool. Who are you using it for? You going to use it for them, or you going to use it for us?
Mm-hmm.
And that might be a difficult conversation for some of us, but it's got to be had.
Well, and the reason why it's difficult for us, because many of us don't think in that manner. We don't think about Africa. We don't think about being African. We don't think about being collective. We don't think about sharing and working and building our own. You know, because we've been trained here in America, and America perpetuates individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. That's what America is about. You know, I got to get mine. And if you don't get yours, it's your fault, because right. it's there to get. Not understanding the built-in constant, discrimination within the society, you know. Because you think you as an individual, and I can overcome anything. You know, we're always telling people that, you know. You know, you can do it. You can become this. You can become that, you know. And granted, because you see people do it, and many people have tried to become something, and maybe they persevered and they became that. And that's great for them, you know.
Right.
You know, but what does it speak towards us? What is our situation here? I know we only got a minute left now, so I'm going to let you have that minute. And okay. So we can wrap this up. But I really appreciate this conversation. I'm quite sure now that when this movie comes up, for those who have listened, and hopefully you'll network with others, when you watch Coming to America 2, you know, you'll think about some of the things that we've talked about here, you know.
Yeah. And that's all we're saying. You know, like I said, like we just this is about media literacy. You know, it's not about, like, you know, trying to piss in nobody's cornflakes necessarily. It's about media literacy and just kind of looking at things through a critical lens. And understanding the different parts of the story, and also being balanced, having a balanced assessment of everything that we encounter. You know, just like with a math equation, when you're solving it, you got to be balanced. You divide by five on the left side of the equation, you got to divide by five on the right side of the equation, right? And also, we should start leveraging these experiences, these media events, you know, and start taking them in a different direction. You know, and not just get so mesmerized and enamored and just happy that the Europeans decided to, you know, allow us to be seen, you know, because that's when representation matters becomes cancerous to us. Because we want to be seen. We want to be, like the child in class, you know, they just want to be seen. They just want attention. Mm. Right. But what is the consequence of getting that attention? You know, so we can say, OK, it's a movie. You know, I'm sure it is going to be funny. You know, I'm not a huge Kenya Barris fan. You know, I believe he's one of the writers, because I don't like a lot of, again, the politics of the movie, of the show Black-ish. I don't like a lot of those politics. It's
right.
Real assimilations. Mm-hmm. I'm not a fan of that, but I do watch it at times, and I do find humor in it. So there's some type of balance. I can see both sides of it. You know, politically, I'm against some of the things, but some of the things I do agree with, right? But then some of the things I don't. He wrote it, but at the same time, but I think we should just put more energy and attention on how these movies can push us toward Pan-African nationalism, even if it's like, okay, you want us to go right, we're gonna go left. It's the fork in the road. The movie is gonna push us right, we just go with the flow, we'll go left. And now we're gonna talk about Thomas Sankara, we're gonna talk about Maurice Bishop, we're gonna talk about Walter Rodney maybe. We're gonna talk about how Joffe Joffre reminds us of Mobutu. We talk about Moise Tshombe, who it's kind of funny actually, on Malcolm X's last message. I know we're running out of time. Malcolm X's last message that he delivered in Detroit the week before he got assassinated in Harlem. He said Moise Tshombe was an African that was living in Spain. They brought him in to help to be a puppet, another puppet for the West in another part of the Congo. Malcolm called this man the worst African that was ever born. Mm. And me and my son used to ride in my car listening to that speech when he was younger. We need to start listening to that again more, actually. But when you hear that, it's like, that's hilarious. It's political, and Malcolm was brilliant, a brilliant political theorist, right? But he was humorous at the same time. How you gonna be the worst African ever born of all the billions and billions of Africans that have been born? You call that man the absolute worst African that was ever born? So you know these are the conversations we can have, and these are the rabbit holes we can go down from a movie that Paramount gives us, and Paramount had no intention for us to be talking about none of this.
Right. Oh, no doubt. Just shut up, watch and enjoy. Shut up, watch it and enjoy. Laugh.
The flow. Mm-hmm. You got to go against the flow.
Yeah.
More often than not.
That's right. All right, dear brother. Appreciate that. Brothers and sisters, I thank you for listening. A lot of you were on, and I appreciate that. Hope you have a blessed and wonderful weekend. We end this program, like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a good and safe weekend. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahorie. Bifahorie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Have a blessed and safe weekend. Peace, family.